Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast, y'all. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest, Williamson County School Board member, Elliot Franklin. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. Hey, if you're listening and you like what you hear, please hit the like and subscribe button. Leave a comment. It helps us a lot, and thanks for doing it. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Elliot Franklin. Elliot and his wife, Denise, moved to Tennessee from Texas, along with his six children back in 2018. And like many newbies to Tennessee, they chose Williamson County based on the excellent schools. Growing up, he watched the dedication of his parents, who were both school teachers, and the values they instilled in him to always give back and invest in the communities where we live and worship. He served in the information technology and cybersecurity industry for over 20 years and currently serves on a number of professional and community association boards, as well as the security ministry at Fellowship Bible Church in Brentwood. His interest in serving on the school board is to return parental rights, improve teacher recruitment and retention, and protect our students. These are the core of why he believes school boards exist, but over the past few years, the focus has turned much more political and our kids have suffered. He looks forward to the opportunity of working with parents and return their rights in directing the education and care of their children. He was outspent 5-1 and exposed many important issues and conflicts of interest and still received over 600 votes. Williamson County Schools contains 49 schools and 39,817 students. The district's minority enrollment is 20%. Hello, Mr. Franklin. How are you today?
Hey, doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Awesome. I'm happy to have you. Six kids. Wow. I have two, and some days it's just, let's say, hard. How do you get it all in?
It's very hard. I mean, I'm super transparent, and you know, my wife's the hero in that regard. But yeah, it's a challenge. It absolutely is. Although two of them are out of the house now, we've got four left, and the youngest is 13. So it's much easier now than it was in the early days.
Yeah, they can feed themselves and get themselves off to school. That makes a big difference.
That's right.
So there was a board meeting last night. Am I right? And how did it go? What were the board's priorities?
So yeah, I'll just correct one thing that you mentioned. I am not an active board member. I did lose the election, but I am still very involved, and I do follow the meetings, and I write a blog, following each one. So yes, there was a board meeting last night. It was actually very, very well attended. There were a few controversial items on the agenda, as is normally the case. And of course, what's your definition of controversial? But there was the exciting part was there's two new elementary schools that are almost complete being built. And so there was the naming process for those, and the board voted on those two names last night. The I guess the more controversial is there were two different reconsideration requests that parents had submitted for books to be removed or considered to be removed from the libraries at two different Williamson County schools based on their objectionable content. And so the board ultimately deferred the vote on that to the April meeting, which frustrated some board members that just wanted to allow them no matter what. They don't care what the books say. They just want them on the shelves. They think, you know, we're book banners. Whereas, you know, the other group of board members were a little more concerned with the new Age Appropriate Act of 2022 that was passed by the Tennessee legislature saying, you know, it is illegal for schools to have certain books in their libraries. And these, in my and many other people's opinion, the five that were kind of called out, certainly meet that criteria and should not be in our public school libraries. The content is adult, to say the least, and doesn't help grow your educational process, doesn't help you learn literature. It just doesn't help you in what the school district should be teaching you.
So was I correct that you were outspent 5-1, but yet you lost by 600 votes as opposed to you received over 600 votes, which was not enough of the total to actually win? Is that
right? So,
okay.
So- You're correct. In District 4, there's about 14,000 registered voters, and 10% is pretty the norm for turnout. And so I was aiming for 800 votes to be a little over half, and my opponent got about 800 votes or a little over, and I got a little over 600. Although we can get into a lot of it, in terms of crossover voting and some of the laws that are before the legislature or bills that are being proposed now that would kind of close the primaries, which I'm in favor of. But yes, I received about 600, a little over, and my opponent received about 800.
Okay. So now the Williamson County schools are considered the best of the state, if not some of the best in the country. Tennessee public schools have lost more than 14,000 students since the start of the pandemic. With most switching to private schools and a lesser number newly homeschooled, a new report from the Urban Institute found this. The report, which relied on state-level data collected by the Institute in collaboration with the Associated Press and Stanford University, traces enrollment shifts between the 1920 and the 21-22 school years, when an estimated 1.2 million students left public schools nationwide. In Tennessee, there were 981,321 public school students enrolled in 19. By the fall of 2021, that number had decreased to 967,278, according to the report. Tennessee had among the largest new enrollments in private schools, with 18,862 new private school enrollees, or about a 24% increase in private enrollment overall. By the fall of 2021, there were 98,452 students enrolled in Tennessee private schools. Homeschooling increased by more than 2,240 students to 13,600, and 20% increase in enrollment. Williamson County is the largest school district in the state, which is a rather large state. What happens here usually spreads out all over. What changes are we seeing in schools that are good to reverse this trend?
What changes are we seeing that are good?
In public schools to reverse the trend of private and homeschooling.
I don't know that I don't know that we're seeing trends, at least in Williamson County, that are helping reverse this. I did an open records request when I was running to find out that exact information you just shared in Williamson County. How many students were we losing every year with withdrawals, since 19? And it was, I don't have the numbers in front of me. It was 8 or 10,000 students that had withdrawn over that time, and had gone to public schools or I mean private schools or home schools. And just to be transparent, like I was in the campaign, of my six children, my oldest boy did go to all 4 years at Page High School here, which is a Williamson County high school, and had a phenomenal education. Although we homeschooled all of our children from birth, and then we gave them about middle school or so age, we give them the opportunity if they want to be in certain sporting activities or different things. We say, if you want to go, and be in public school, it's not like, necessarily it's a bad thing. We just want to get in the ethics and the morals when they're because we don't feel that that's the school's responsibility. That's the parents' responsibility. And so he did go to all 4 years at Page. All the rest of my children, the four remaining at home, we do, homeschool them, and they also go to a homeschool tutorial a co-op, like a college prep type co-op. But in terms of trends, in terms of trends that are kind of would hope to turn that around, I'm still not seeing that. I think that's why there's so many grassroots efforts to try to change that and try to get true conservative, and you go back to what's the definition of conservative, but true conservative members on the school board so that we can get these political agendas out of the schools that all these teachers are, or administrators are pushing on the students instead of teaching the basics, reading, writing, history, in the STEM curriculums. Instead, we're doing all this social emotional learning and critical race learning and all these different things that are distracting and dividing our students instead of drawing them in and wanting to actually learn and grow and be real productive, citizens and employees.
Yeah, another 2,678 students' shifts in education remain unexplained. Where did they go? Drop out?
Right. Where did they go? I guess depending on what age. And if if you mark that you homeschool, then you don't really have to report in necessarily. So that's true. Where did they go? I don't know.
Okay. Recent release of an international research review that found masks are ineffective against COVID-19 and the flu. We knew that from the get-go. Why did Williamson County delay so long after Governor Lee removed the mandates for masks to let the kids take the masks off?
Yeah, great question. I was actually in person at that board meeting when, well, the number of board meetings voting in terms of in favor of masks. And again, just diving in and running for this campaign and just trying to analyze the different board members. It's a lot of them are just power hungry and just and they, or they just rubber stamp anything that this administration puts in front of them, which is not the way it's supposed to be. The school board is the board of the superintendent. They are the superintendent's boss. And if you look at our board meetings, one of the things before every vote, the chair looks at the superintendent and says, what is your recommendation for this? Yes or no? And then 9 times out of 10, actually probably 10 times out of 10, they vote for whatever he recommends. And so, regardless, and they even commented, we got thousands or 700, 800 emails against that. But for every one of those, a lot of people were scared to speak up and they didn't want that, because those are discoverable emails and they didn't want that to be in public record that they were, necessarily for the masks or different things. And so we know that they're out there. And so we're going to vote that we keep the masks on because we just feel, that's what the administration wants. And even though there was lines out the door, there was an employee at that meeting, a WCS employee that's worked for the district over 20 years and has said he's never seen that many people. There were, hundreds of people in line that couldn't even get in the door, all, asking them to remove the masks. And the board didn't care. They voted, to keep them.
So I've had several guests on this show. This is like the 55th episode, and I've had Lori Cardoza Moore on, who deals with the textbooks. I've had Robin Steenman, who founded Moms for Liberty here in Williamson County. I've also had Tiffany Justice, who founded the Moms for Liberty nationwide. Tricia Lucente, who's Tennessee Parents' Choice, et cetera, et cetera. All said the same thing. We had three rounds of ESSER funds that came from the federal government during the pandemic. The first round was pretty good. It probably kept schools alive when they, were basically on the ropes. The second set, maybe a little bit of overkill in some schools, really depended on how they were handling the situation with the online learning, et cetera, et cetera. The third round came with a lot of strings attached. The federal government basically used it, even though it was a small percentage of the overall school's budget, to put a lot of strings that the administrators, the supervisors, and the boards had to basically put up with in order to keep that money. Pe Peggy Sh Penny Schwinn, who is the Tennessee state, even though she was brought in from out of state, superintendent of schools or commissioner of schools, seems to have been the one who was going along with those strings, whereas there was a lot of pushback from parents and the school boards in general. But when we saw on video moms like Leanne, I'm forgetting her last name, the Disney actress who moved here from California, to say, "Stop the madness. We don't want schools doing this to our children." They went viral by nodding their heads and listening to the parents, but they couldn't do anything. Were their hands tied with what they could actually do to accommodate what the parents wanted in the curriculums of the school?
Yeah, great question. And it's ironic you mentioned that because last night, one of the items in consent agenda, meaning, it's things that they just push through and they don't discuss and they try to hide. One of the items in the consent agenda last night was every 6 months, because they accepted those funds, every 6 months they have to do a report to the state saying how they're using them and how they plan to use them. And there's still a little over $3 million in Williamson County schools of ESSER funds that they haven't spent, and they have to spend them by next summer, or they, or they have to, or they lose them. And in that memo, you have to fill out a rubric that the state gives you that says, that so there's questions that it asks: are you doing pods in your classroom? Are you doing masks? And different things. And they answered correctly on this one and said, no, the school board voted to not require masks, and no one's pushed back on those funds. So I think that that's the narrative they wanted us to hear. But when they filled out that survey and submitted it back in, now they're clearly telling them we're not doing masks, we're not doing podding, we're not doing any of that. And there's been no pushback on those funds. And again, there's still $3 million that hasn't been spent. And they claim that they're going to use that next year for additional, I think, counselors or counseling services. Of course, the problem is once that runs out, then the taxpayers have to fund what the grant funded, unless it's to some sort of, contract labor, which may be an option as well.
So the unions were trying to keep the schools closed and demanding HVAC system replacements, things like that. I haven't seen any schools replacing HVAC systems to, I guess the theory there would be to circulate the air better, to keep it filtered from COVID and any other plagues that would arise. Is that something that $3 million could be a one-time spend and then you don't have to worry about future years' strings attached to it? Or do they make you do things like wit and wisdom textbooks that need to be updated every couple of years? So that would then become on the taxpayer's dime, knowing full well that most parents don't want their tax funds going for something like that.
Yeah, most of the spend that I've seen from that or the use of those funds were all for additional staffing, contractors, stuff to help with the reading and writing and the skills that fell behind through the virtual learning and through the masking. So I don't know that it could be used for any capital type purchases. I think everything was more on the operational side.
Okay, so because we know that obviously the association of counselors and nurses and NEA member teachers and DEI type of administrators and things that grow the top heavy of a school and don't trickle down to the kids themselves is certainly not teaching them what we would like them to teach them. That type of money spent is not money we would want our taxpayer dollars going towards either. Is that the kind of thing that we're going to be seeing with that money?
Well, you know, all I can say is when I look at the budget that was approved for this year. So, you know, in the Williamson County, the general purpose school fund, which was about $467 million, or about $38 million more than the prior year. If you look at that, there were, you know, 178 additional teaching positions. And if you look at those, like a third of those or additional positions, not just teaching, a third of those were counselors. So again, we're creating problems and then trying to solve those by hiring, counselors, where we're the ones creating the problems, like you've mentioned, through the textbook selection, the DEI initiatives, those kind of different things that are causing the division and causing these problems and the anxiety and all these things where they're now needing the counselors. They put $117,000 in the budget for a single person, a community engagement specialist, or $300,000 in the budget for COVID support services so that they can continue covering these after the grant runs out. Those are all, you know, those were $168,000 for culture consulting. What is culture consulting and why do we need it? And those are all things in the current budget that we're operating on, the 2023 budget. So I can only imagine that those are the type of things that this grant would be used for, because that's what this administration is pushing.
There we go. We just discovered it. Okay. So not Wilco, hopefully a fair question, but the Wilson County Board of Education Ethics Committee in Tennessee dismissed most of the complaints from 9 parents and community members against retired Marine Joe Padilla, who won his Zone 4 seat in August, along with 3 other conservative Republicans. One speaker at the Ethics Committee meeting accused Padilla of posting to his Facebook account that he disagrees with transgender hormone drugs and surgeries for minors, claiming such a post constitutes, quote, propping up right-wing talking points. Has the mob tried to take you or any board members in Wilson County down in this way?
It's very interesting you asked that. So we have a current board member who is very active on social media and has conducted, you know, some interviews with some very liberal, you know, magazines and newspapers that have that he's, you know, stated things and he's done interviews. And I brought that up and said that, you know, what he's doing, it's a violation of the, you know, of our school board ethics policy that they have, the Williamson County School. And I sent it to the attorney, the school board attorney, and got no response. So I sent it up to Senator Jack Johnson's office, and he immediately referred me to the TDOE, who said, school board policies don't matter, it's state law. He can break that ethics policy all day long. There's nothing we can do. He has to break state or federal law in order for any, you know, to have any repercussions, which is why we need this bill that's before the current House that we can recall a school board members to pass, because unless they break state or federal law right now, we can't do anything about it. Has that been done against me? Sure. I mean, when I was posting things on Twitter when I was running, you know, I got trolled like crazy, but nothing to the effect of like being, you know, since I'm not serving, certainly did nothing to remove me from that standpoint. But yeah, you have to expect that, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the current state of affairs. USA Classical Academy, a proposed charter school with ties to Hillsdale College, has withdrawn its application from Williamson County Schools. In an email to families Monday, the school's locally based board members said the school had been left out of a strategic alliance formed as part of Tennessee's push to, quote, open dozens of charter schools in the next few years. That was Governor Lee's 100 charter school push. Is the school board at odds with Lee's strategic alliance?
Yes. So I was involved with that as well. And I attended all those meetings in terms of from the, you know, trying to get a charter school here, super, you know, in support of that. And there was, yeah, and there was emails and phone calls to the board as well. We had quite a packed room that showed up when the board was reviewing that application and the different things they, you know, made up in terms of the rubric. The rubric that, that the state gives was very, very subjective. And so, yes, the school board, and they'll say it, two or three members came out specifically, we're not against charter schools. This is just not the right one. Well, you know, oh, great. That's a talking point. Well, what is, and why aren't you for this one? What did they not qualify for in the application? And is they just don't want competition because then they lose that control. But yes, absolutely. We don't have, I think two out of the 12 board members voted for it. And so, yeah, we're not going to see a charter school until we have a change in our board makeup.
Yeah, and Lee said it intended to use Hillsdale's free K through 12 curriculum, but that was an independent entity with the ability to change the curriculum. The school said it did not intend to partner with a charter management organization, CMO. Don't know. Yeah. A California Christian physical education teacher was allegedly fired for refusing to lie to parents about their children's gender identities at school and rejecting having males in female locker rooms, both policies that violated her faith beliefs. Harpeth Hall opened their enrollment to biological males after being 150 years of being all girls and private. What would our board do if this was happening here?
Yeah, thankfully I'm not aware of any of that that's been raised directly, although there certainly continue to be school safety incidents that go underreported. But from a, from a gender bathroom type situation that I'm aware of, that any of the school board agendas or meetings or anything that's been discussed, I'm not aware that's been an issue we've dealt with here yet.
Okay, something that we don't have to worry about for the time being. What is the relationship with the unions and the boards and supervisor Jason Golden?
Yeah, there's the one union that kind of the chair of the teachers union here does usually show up for the board meetings. She's usually also at the work sessions. But what's interesting is like when they sign up for public comment or anything, they don't give her any more time than anyone else, which I think is very interesting. She's not invited to the executive meetings, but certainly they have certain things they have to bounce off of that union first before they bring those to the board. I don't know if it's a good relationship or not. It seems like they kind of leave them out of a lot of the discussions, but obviously there's stuff going on behind the scenes when they are passing different policies, but they kind of keep it very quiet.
Yeah. Senator Todd Gardenhires, where he's a Republican from Chattanooga, his bill to include Hamilton County in Tennessee's education savings account pilot program was passed with a 20-6 vote on the Senate floor yesterday. Maybe last week. Senate Bill 0012 would expand the eligibility criteria for the state's ESA pilot program to include students attending priority schools within Hamilton County. Do you think that will increase the exodus from public schools?
Help me understand that again.
Basically expanding Tennessee's new education savings account pilot program in now Hamilton County, making possibly more public school students eligible for private school funding, accelerating the exodus that we're seeing in public schools.
So is your understanding, is that some sort of, you know, voucher type system?
Yeah, where a person could put their own money into an education savings account and use it for private school.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for school choice. And so I know that's been very successful in many, many places. Would it speed that up, that the exodus? I think so. I absolutely think so. Because, you know, just like any, you know, we talk about this at the school board meetings and when you're running, I mean, you have to run the schools like a business from an economic standpoint, from a budgetary standpoint, from a goal standpoint, just like you would run a business. And so when you open a new business, you're going to go where things are where you get better service, and where and so why wouldn't you take advantage of that if your children are being indoctrinated and not being taught the basics of what's going to make them successful when they graduate? Why wouldn't you go and put that money in and go to a private school where you can get a better education?
That's right. Legislation that would eliminate mandatory bias training for teachers in Tennessee has been placed on the Senate Education Committee calendar. Senate Bill 0102, sponsored by, here he is again, Senator Todd Gardenhire, Republican Chattanooga, passed on first and second consideration in January and will be considered by the committee on February 22nd, tomorrow. Do you like that law?
Yes, they, you know, I'm not super familiar with all the specifics because there's so many, great bills before, the House right now, but, there is a lot of that bias training that the teachers do have to go through in their professional development days and prior to the school year. And again, you know, you talk about, you know, we're going through the math textbook selection right now for curriculum and these workbooks and guidebooks, the teachers are not allowed to teach anymore. They have to read line by line out of these workbooks. And that goes to that bias training as well. They can't, you know, a robot can do that. And our teachers are not robots. Again, they need to be given the ability to teach the subjects and not be told what they have to think and how they have to think, because then they're just passing that on to the students and teaching it with a bias. Again, how does that help our children learn and grow? It needs to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a viral TikTok video of a teacher here in Tennessee saying she refused to comply with the laws to get rid of now banned inappropriate books. You're nodding your head. You must have seen this. Turns out that was staged and she was fired last week. Behind her were rows and rows of empty bookshelves. And apparently that was because they were being moved, not because they were banned. But I know some teachers are ideologically in favor of this stuff, coming from unions and national education associations, counselors, nurses, et cetera. What do you do if the legislature passes rules the citizens of Tennessee want, but the teachers won't comply?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's similar. Well, I mean, it goes back kind of to the school board example with the ethics policy, but a policy is different from a law is different from a policy. And so, you know, at that point, you've got to follow just like you would. Again, you go back to that business example. If they're breaking a business policy that you have, that they, you know, signed when they signed the contract saying they would follow all state, you know, laws and school board policies, then you've got to follow the disciplinary process. You have to. There has to be consequences or this was going to continue to grow out of control, which it, you know, really has. So, yeah, I'm super, you know, definitely saw that video and you know, like a lot of stuff on the internet, you know, wondered if it was true. But then I did see that she was terminated and rightly so. So,
yeah, sadly, I just saw someone else similar, much more vulgar of a TikTok, but was fired, ends up getting hired in Maryland. So, you know, there's a revolving door in the teaching profession, and certain places will tolerate it, certain ones that won't. I was glad to see Tennessee is one of those that won't. Speaking of that, Oklahoma is ranked last at 11%. I'll explain that in a second. Mississippi 49th at 15%. Tennessee public school teachers are eighth from the bottom at 25% of the average $60,000, according to the National Education Association, who I don't trust, but they put it out. The national average is 57%, make 60K. Vermont, Illinois, Washington, where Steve is, and New York rank above average. So is money for teachers a problem?
I mean, that's what you're going to hear at almost every budget meeting, almost every school board meeting. And so, again, both my parents were school teachers, you know, very frugal. We lived, you know, I had everything I needed, but we, you know, they were both extremely frugal and conservative, fiscally conservative as well. They certainly don't do it for the money, but at the same time, you know, they shouldn't be in poverty. You know, when I'm looking at the numbers, the starting salary in Williamson County with a bachelor's degree is $45,900. And then it goes up to 50 if you've got a master's, and then 55 if you've got a PhD for first year teachers. You know, and I compare that to now what we're seeing everywhere, which I obviously don't agree with, but the $20 at Starbucks or anywhere else an hour. And so they're making just a little more than a Starbucks barista. That's probably not okay. They probably should be making more than that, especially they're pouring their life into our children. Give, you know, day in and day out. I know my mom was up all hours of the night doing lesson plans and grading and all the kind of stuff, you know, because she really cared about the kids. And most of these teachers, most of them do as well. So, Yes, they probably should be paid more. My answer to that is we don't need more taxes. As Williamson County, we're already over $1 billion in debt as a county. What we need to do is those things I referred to earlier, cut back on all this waste at the administrative office, and all these positions that we don't need. Oh, and by the way, the 335% increase in math textbooks this year. So we're going to go from spending 1.7 million on math textbooks to 7.4 million. Why? Why? They're mostly digital anyway. What and why are we going, so there's so much waste at the administrative offices. We could easily give our teachers raises and not increase the taxes.
Wow. Baltimore, I wish you didn't tell me that. That just made me sad. Because that's woke math too. It's not new math. It's not
It
old
is.
math.
It is.
Baltimore City is facing a devastating reality as the latest round of state test scores were released. Project Baltimore analyzed the results and found a shocking number of Baltimore City schools where not a single student is doing math at grade level. Baltimore City's math scores were the lowest in the state. Just 7% of third through eighth graders tested proficient in math, which means 93% could not do math at grade level. 0%. What are you preparing these kids for over there? Said Patterson, a Baltimore resident who made headlines in January 2022 when he filed a lawsuit against Baltimore City schools. Are we expecting these kids to kill off themselves? I mean, we see the number of teen shootings happening just this year. What jobs are we preparing these kids for? That's the future, he said. Do we think lawsuits are coming here? We have some 0% schools too.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of lawsuits against the schools, I don't know. It's hard to tell because when you go to these school board meetings, there's not a lot of people that show up, and the people that do show up are usually the same folks every week. And I know a lot of that's just because they are tired of the board not listening, and so they're like, what's the point in showing up? So unless they're doing a lot of this stuff kind of behind the scenes or meeting with them individually or with emails and phone calls, I don't know, but you're right in terms of the math. Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of this whole curriculum process we've been going through here, and that came up at the board meeting last night as well. In terms of it's down to, I think four different publishers, and one of the members asked directly about the social emotional learning that's in the books, and it is in there, and they acknowledged it, and they said, well, it's just in the extra assignments. It's not in the main curriculum, and there's just questions that they ask them, like, how do you feel about math, and how do you feel about discourse? And my response is, why does that matter? How does that teach them math by asking them how they feel about it? Does it that's not at all. This is why we're getting 0%. This is why we can't pass these tests, because you're spending all this time with social emotional learning instead of here's how you multiply, here's how you divide, here's a word problem. Yeah, that so sure, the lawsuits may be coming, or they're just going to withdraw them and again do teach them at home or at private school.
Yeah, well, $1 billion in debt, lawsuit settlements are not going to help that cause at all. It is Black History Month again. More than 200 students walked out of class at a Tuscaloosa high school on Wednesday after they say they were told by school leaders to omit certain relevant events from an upcoming student-led Black History Month program. The students were told they couldn't talk about slavery and civil rights because one of our administrators felt uncomfortable. Anything like that going on here?
Well, I mean, you'll hear a recurring theme at the board meeting. There's a certain group that always signs up every single month without fail, and they always ask the board why they have not responded or taken action on the $50,000 survey that they had done back last year or the prior year on race relations in our schools and the amount of incidents that continue to happen from a discipline standpoint. But in terms of students walking out or being told you can't say certain things, I've not heard of that. But there are definitely a lot of discipline challenges that are happening in the schools that are again, and I say the schools are asking for it. They're teaching it with the critical race theory. How do they expect it not to happen when they are purposefully dividing groups and saying one group's inferior and one group's superior? You're going to continue to have those challenges, which is unnecessary.
Yeah, and it's making them crazy. I mean, they
Yeah.
just, I'm sure most of the kids sit quietly and nod their heads, but they can't like this if they were raised anywhere near the church or,
Right.
two parents or whatever. I understand. It's unfortunate that they have to sit there 8 hours a day and put up with this stuff. And walkouts seem like maybe a trend. Texas A&M, is among the most conservative public universities in America, with a student body well to the right of its peers at other schools. Its traditions of military service and commitments to agriculture and mechanical sciences, the original meaning of A&M, or more than a decade, diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI policies have transformed the university. What are your thoughts on DEI, CRT, which we call wit and wisdom, and age-inappropriate LGBTQ plus ampersand hashtag dollar sign percent curriculum in the schools?
Yeah, it goes back to one of the cores of why I ran, three basic reasons, and you mentioned them in the intro. But you know, and I live this everyday life in my job as well, is I am a huge back to the basics person, and it's oversimplified, but we've got to get back to the basics. And you know, from my family, from the way I've raised my family, from my job, for, you know, I'm a supervisor. When you're given a quota, when you're forced to have some sort of quota system, it's never gonna work out well for anyone. And so you've got to focus on the basics of the reading and the writing and again history and the STEM subjects. And if you focus on DEI and all the different critical theories, and like you said, the woke curriculums that we continue to adopt, you're going to continue to have challenges. You're going to continue to have these discipline issues. You're going to continue to have, like you said, the dropping test scores and the higher levels of folks repeating the grades. So I'm certainly not a fan of that. And some even, you know, accused me when I ran of not being, you know, not even caring about that. And I said, again, if you treat everyone like you want to be treated, you don't. But as soon as you tell me I'm forced to do something, that I have a quota, then it immediately kind of gets you on a defensive. Whereas if you're, you know, addressing the root cause of issues, I think everyone's much more successful. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of those different initiatives, and I don't think they. I think it's been proven many times they don't help with our learning, and they actually bring people, divide people and bring scores down.
Yeah, we're falling behind our peers in Japan and South Korea, and our enemies in China and Russia. I mean, their scores are better than ours. The libraries are in a tough spot. They are institutions that are supposed to have any book somebody would ever want, but these new LGBTQ and Ibram X. Kendi racism books aren't appropriate for all ages. What do you think of the Library Association's handling of these issues in store and online?
Yeah, I mean, multiple times we've been called book banners, and you know, we have example after example of these books that are, again, you know, kind of what I've said over and over is, if I were to sit out in my front, you know, yard or my front porch and read some of these books to my neighbors or to my neighbor's children, I would be arrested, right, for grooming or different things. And I know that was a term that came up, but it's you know, I would be arrested. And so why are we spending taxpayer dollars to put these in either school libraries or county libraries when the content is, again, it's, and this came up last night in that, you know, discussion last night, there's horrible scenes in these books that, you know, aren't helping the children learn. And one of the board members who was, said they should definitely stay in the libraries was like, well, it's preparing them because it's inevitable that it's going to happen to some of the kids. Well,
wow.
Okay.
That's disgusting. Yeah,
that is. And so you want it there just because you know it's going to happen to them. I mean, I don't understand the logic, but that's what we have on our hands.
There used to be such a thing as R-rated movies, NC-17 movies, movies behind the counter with brown paper bags in them, separate sections, you know, at the video rental counter that, you know, was X-rated and you didn't want kids anywhere near it or even looking in that direction. Now, right, all of a sudden it's in the public schools. Something happened and I'm not sure what it was, but I don't like it. Ibram Kendi this week was promoting his new book, How to Be a Young Anti-Racist, a young adult spinoff of Kendi's 2019 bestseller, How to Be an Anti-Racist. I'm sure that will end up in the library. From Texas to California, the authors of their publisher, Penguin Teen, are selling it. Penguin Classics was bought by a company that sells anti-Semitic books to Saudis and Palestinian kids. How are we even screening these books?
Yeah, that came up last night and at the work session as well. I mean, you know, there's in Williamson County, there's a policy, which I'm assuming most schools have to have, but there's a policy that the librarians have to follow in terms of how they screen the books. But the question was even asked, does every librarian read every book? And of course, you know, the answer is no, but they get groupings and they get trusted publishers and and to your point, they have, you know, the larger, you know, library associations that recommend them and that review them, but they don't have a rating system. And that's what we kept asking for last night is, you know, movies have a rating system. We need a rating system for these books. And when this reconsideration committee looked at these five books last night, which was made up of you know, administrators, teachers, and I think one parent maybe on the committee, they said, well, we're looking at this Age Appropriate Act of 2022, and we don't know how they're defining objectionable, and so we don't think this content's objectionable, so we're gonna con you know we're gonna recommend they stay on the shelves. And so again, the librarians are pushing that they're not going to ban any books. They're not going to take any books off the shelf.
The National Association of Librarians, pretty much anything that has the word national in it is a problem and association. So I get that. How about tech in schools? Missouri Senator Josh Hawley introduced legislation Tuesday barring social media companies from offering accounts to children under 16. Children suffer every day from the effects of social media. At best, big tech companies are neglecting our children's health and monetizing their personal information, he said. They all have to use Facebook and Google. But those companies push inappropriate clickbait to them, like porn and violence, so they can't avoid it all ages. And they build profiles on them to sell. What do you think the solution is? Filters don't work, that's for sure.
Yeah, I guess I have a little. This is what I do for a living, so I'm a cybersecurity professional, and so, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, social media is a drug, and you're right too. Like with the Chromebooks we give our students here in Williamson County, it's been, you know, parents time and time again, they've gotten around all the filters, and the kids will show the parents how they're able to find stuff. And so from a social media standpoint, yeah, absolutely. It's anxiety, it's depression, and so there's got to be some, you know, but again, that's not the, you know, should they be blocked at the school? Yes, but it goes back to the parents. They're going to have cell phones. They're not going to be blocked on there unless it's up to the parents. And so I know we've got limits on ours. You know, they can only be on 30 minutes a day for social media, and it automatically turns it off and different stuff. But again, I think that goes back to the parents in terms of they've, you know, that's hard, and it needs to, you know, and you're right. These social media companies are selling the data, and they are monetizing it. And they're not protecting the children, and they're allowing them to be exposed to all kind of horrible things. And so that's where the parents have to kind of take ownership. But for certain, on the school networks and the school property, it should certainly be, you know, blocked and restricted as much as possible.
Okay, last question. We're out of time here. Is there any truth to the rise of furries in elementary schools like Grasslands in Williamson County?
Yeah, I know that made the rounds and went viral and such. Yeah, that well, and I'll just say one thing real quick on that is if you go to there's a new policy in Williamson County, or maybe it's not new, but that they have to post on the school website all registered clubs and organizations. And so you can go to the Grassland site, for example, and there are some, and this is a middle school, mind you, that there are some LGBT or student organ, you know, recognized clubs there. And so where there are furries as well, I'm not there, I don't know, but I will tell you that there are some other clubs there that are not helping the students learn.
And those clubs that are student-led have to have a adult parent, teacher, not parent, sorry, teacher associated or attached to it. Has that individual been looked at to make sure that they could pass a background check and are not a harm to those children?
So you're right. They have to have, if that's elementary level or junior high level, they have to have a parent, or I'm sorry, you're at a teacher sponsor. And they're not supposed to be able to be a, they're not supposed to talk in the meetings or anything. They're just supposed to be there to make sure that they're, you know, that they're safe or what have you. And the teacher there is kind of running the meetings and kind of indoctrinating them. So no, I don't know if those, they are a WCS employee, but they are the ones leading the meetings and supposed to be.
Elliot, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you coming on so much. I really wish you had won. We're nearing the end here. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more, maybe about you and what you're up to, or anything that they can get involved in Williamson County Schools to make them a better place for our kids.
Yeah, I do write a blog for the school board on the you mentioned it on the Moms for Liberty website. So if they go to the Williamson County Moms for Liberty chapter, I do write a school board blog 3 times a month on the different activities that are going on. That would be the best place to find me.
Awesome. Thanks again for coming on with us. Hope to have you on again sometime.
All right, thanks.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard and anything else on my mind. Producer Steve, what did you think of our guest school board member, formerly didn't win, Elliot Franklin?
Well, we needed him to win. That's all I can say. And the guy knows his stuff, and he is very active. And I need to just sum this up in a few words. It's pretty dismal out there. We have a lot of followers and not a lot of leaders. We need more people that are leaders like our guest.
You got it. The problem with English departments, they don't teach English, The College Fix by Maggie Kelly. Maggie Kelly, assistant editor, February 9th, 2023. Humanities programs devastated by critical theory could save their disciplines by going back to the basics. College English and humanities professors who came of age in the last few decades have abandoned their traditions and sold their students short. These professors could have guided their charges in leading beautiful forms of expression, truths about human nature, and great ideas of wisdom, love, virtue, piety, and the good life, among many other treasures. Clip one.
We want everyone who's engaged with the campus from all walks of life and backgrounds to be able to engage with the campus in a way where they feel seen, heard, and are able to bring their full selves and thrive, whether it's working, learning, or studying.
The plan uses four priority areas to better help achieve their goals: coordination, structure, assessment, and accountability. Leaders are hoping that this will have a positive impact on campus, starting with training to better understand the principles of the program.
When you focus on a small set of actions that can have the biggest impact, it can really transform the institution.
The transformation came with an inward look. Surveys and focus groups on campus give the college insights into what students and staff need.
For Dartmouth, we want to continue to be a leader that is out front in terms of talking about the most cutting edge things, and DEI is no different.
The college's goals also include expanding a mentorship program for underrepresented students as a way of getting everyone involved in broader fields of study. And the Institute for Black Intellectual and Cultural Life will also be established.
For Black identified individuals and others to come and learn about all the contributions of Black identified individuals.
Data collection will measure the success of the initiative overall.
So our data person works with other data members across the institution.
Community members will have a chance to voice their opinions about the plan in January in the form of surveys and engagement sessions. In Hanover, John Hawks, NBC5.
Identity, identify as? That's interesting.
Black identify. Back to the article. Instead, they sideline literature and high culture to focus on philosophical theories about topics trending in academia, such as race, representation, capitalism, sexuality, and gender. Many of these theories came from 20th century far left writers, such as the French philosophers Derrida and Foucault, and the Marxist Italian Antonio Gramsci, and their many lesser acolytes and imitators. Even worse, professors have attempted to teach students this theory without the basic background training in philosophy or other disciplines required to understand it and evaluate it independently. Some of these literature scholars have been reflecting lately on this state of affairs. A few have even suggested that the study of English and other humanities disciplines may have lost its way around the 1970s, when professors besotted with imported European philosophy started making their profession all about theory, which seemed much more exciting and politically relevant than the careful study of epics, poems, novels, and plays. Clip number two, please.
Major shift in topic now.
Hey!
Wild woke college classes popping up all across the country. This one's pretty wild. Take a look. Here's just a few of the courses from this year that it sparks a backlash. Remember, people are paying for this. Tuition paying for, The Problem of Whiteness at the University of Chicago. Angry White Male Studies at the University of Kansas. Porn, of course, at Westminster College in Utah. And Queer Dance at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. I mean, honestly, some of these sound kind of interesting, and I might attend some of those. You know?
Well, listen. The nice thing about the porn class is if you get a bad grade, at least you'll know how you can change it at the end of the semester. Hey-o!
Oh,
there you
gosh,
go.
Oh
we
gosh.
Had to have one. But here's the reality. Colleges are becoming woke, racist daycares in that so much of their energy is put into teaching you to hate white people. Think about the course title, The Problem with Angry White Males. Can you imagine a world where you had that course in regard to any other ethnicity? They would be burning down the campus, and maybe rightfully so, because it's outwardly racist. But that's who runs these colleges now. It's just racist perverts.
Well, you know, I was having college flashbacks when we were talking about this topic, and I was required to, I was going to say forced to watch The Unbearable Lightness of Being back in college. And it's described on Rotten Tomatoes as exploring sexual mores, yada, 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 but it blends the political and the erotic.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this was more than 20 years ago. So,
yeah.
I mean, sometimes college courses or even just one part of a college course intentionally pushes the envelope, creates discussion.
Uh-huh.
You know,
but
how unusual is this?
But that's not what this
porn.
Is.
Like, is that...
No, that's...
Like,
the point
that
is...
strange that...
That's perverts, okay? We have to call this what it is. Hey, we'll all get together and watch porn. Like, who is, first of all, who's paying to watch porn? I did a little research for this study, and apparently it's free all over the internet. This whole time, I didn't know.
All right, wait.
Back to the article. Those professors went on to teach generations of students in the 90s and later. Michael Clune, a professor of English and the humanities at Case Western University who came up in that era, described the scene in a recent article for the highbrow Los Angeles Review of Books. Quote, when I was an undergraduate in the 90s, the witchy logic and arcane vocabulary of high theory served as a key to the malevolent forces hidden by the oppressive, indomitable, literalist common sense of the government, the media, the corporate world, he wrote. That is convoluted, but Clune makes some good points. The humanities disciplines, after the theory revolution of the 1970s and 80s, no longer presented themselves primarily as centers of disciplinary expertise, which require long apprenticeships to practice effectively. Instead, they became boxes holding a special kind of thought. This thought required no expertise or long training to practice effectively. In theory, anyone could do it. Now, this style of thought and vocabulary has been lifted from the box of the English department and placed in the infinitely better furnished and more spacious boxes of some of society's most powerful institutions. Clip number three, please.
Colleges are supposed to be about scholars.
Yeah.
You know, and free speech and opening your mind. And now it's about you can't say this. How dare you?
Not only that, worse than that, it's you can't teach at this high a level. How dare you? Hence the NYU
right.
Organic science producer, professor, who was fired because too many of the kids' parents wrote complaining letters, you're making a course too hard. And these
oh, yes.
are the people who are going to be our professional,
right.
our health professionals.
Oh, no. I mean, colleges have been taken over by ideologues.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, there is something going on here, to come full circle here, that is very reminiscent of Mao's Cultural Revolution in 1966 with DEI officers as the Red Guard. I mean, people like that. Now, of course, there is a place for DEI officers, and there should be some. Like, I think Michigan State has 140. That's a lot of witches to be hunting.
That was Bill Barr and Sean Penn. Penn says get vaxxed or go to jail. Marr hosts politically incorrect. They sound super high, but good point. When English professors rejected their own legacy, they opened the Pandora's box of critical theory, and they unleashed woke ideologies on the campus and then the broader culture. Mark Burleen, sorry if I got that wrong, a writer and English professor emeritus at Emory University, described the shift in an essay last year. When American English departments tossed out the literary canon in the 1980s, they discarded cultural coherence and patriotism and replaced it with cynicism, identity politics, and cultural nihilism. Burleen argued in Chronicles, a magazine of American culture, Burleen wrote that initially he and his colleagues believed the cultural chaos promoted by English professors would stay in college. He was wrong. As Andrew Sullivan wrote for New York Magazine in 2018, 2 years before he resigned for having unacceptable opinions, we all live on a campus now. In the last decade, blather about capitalism and patriarchy and whiteness has moved from elite literary circles to the center of progressive politics, Bjorlin said. Not only has it permeated universities and elite media, it has invaded major institutions from the military to professional science to elementary schools. Your average contemporary DEI administrator is likely well-versed in phrases like critical race studies and marginalized identities, concepts derived in part from postmodern philosophy and cultural Marxism, which seems so hip and new to humanities professors and majors a few decades ago. For Professor Kloon, the question now arises, what can an English professor teach someone about race, class, gender, or capitalism that they can't learn on the internet or Netflix? To which I add, what can a contemporary English professor teach someone about race, class, or gender that she won't get in her required college and later corporate diversity trainings? Given the institutionalization of theory, why teach it in courses at all? Literary professors should learn again to see beauty and wisdom, not just race and gender. Here's how I advise English and other humanitarian professors to win new majors after losing so many. Perform a variable service and resurrect their disciplines. Teach how great artists innovated and refined their work. Some professors, mostly at religious schools, still do this, but apparently most don't anymore. Here's critic and exiled English professor William Deschewitz on the subject of Quillette. Anyone in academia humanities will see the problem. Loving books is not why people are supposed to become English professors, and it hasn't been for a long time. Novels, poems, stories, plays, these are text, no different in kind from other texts. The purpose of studying them is not to appreciate or understand them. It is to interrogate them for their ideological investments in patriarchy and white supremacy and Western imperialism and ethnocentrism, and then to unmask and debunk them, to drain them of their poisonous persuasive powers. The passions that are meant to draw people to the profession of literary study are not aesthetic, they are political. Dershowitz, who not to be confused with Alan Dershowitz, Dershowitz, who earned a doctorate at Columbia and taught at Yale, saw up close how elite English departments had abandoned aesthetics and careful study for politics and theory. Like so many others, he came to want nothing to do with it. I do not have Kloon or Dershowitz's advanced learnings or experience, but I share their disillusionment. As a young person, I had aesthetic passion for literature, the same way other girls adored pop albums or obsessed over cute boys. My adult intellectual life began in Miss Rice's Catholic school eighth grade class reading The Odyssey with stars in my eyes, thrilling to its exquisite language, its subtle expression longingly for both home and adventure, and the knockout epic simile describing Odysseus and Penelope's marital reunion. I learned that passage at age 13 and can still recite it from memory. I won't quote it here, go read it yourself. Reading poetry like that, I believe then that literature could show me the deepest things about being human. Clip number four, please.
Comedy icon John Cleese, who'd been invited by Cambridge University to speak to students, cancelled himself before the event was held. This was after the student union decided to blacklist art historian Andrew Graham Dixon, who they said offended students when he performed a Hitler impersonation during a debate on the question of whether good taste exists. I would have thought his action sounded absolutely perfect for the topic. And Cleese pointed out that he had done a Hitler impersonation once as well. He tweeted, "I apologise to anyone at Cambridge who was hoping to talk with me, but perhaps some of you can find a venue where woke rules do not apply. Pow." But as often happens on Twitter, the keyboard warriors don't let up, with some accusing Cleese of making this call purely, cop this, for self-promotion. John Cleese. This guy has 5.6 million followers on Twitter. He's won more awards in the entertainment industry than most other comedians in the world. He declined a CBE, Commander of the Order of the British Empire, in 1996. He's a national treasure. Does that sound like someone who needs to increase his following? Cleese made the point that while we're so obsessed with wokeness, we're going to miss out on so much for fear of offending the one in a million person who makes being offended a lifetime pursuit. Spot on.
Yep.
Yep. Back to the article. But I lost my way when I went to college. My comparative literature professors with fancy credentials and dangerous charisma seduce me with bits and pieces of critical theory instead of nourishing the passions for literature planted so carefully by my middle and high school teachers. I thought theory was tray sophisticated and intellectual when I was 19, but now I wish I had never heard of it. I am convinced that my professors sold their birthright for a mess of pretentious and harmful ideas. Today, literature departments are a wilderness of courses straying into identity politics, media, and various agenda-driven critical theories, with some novels and poems serving as pretext. Berlin wrote in his essay, "There is no coherent sequence that students must master, no tradition, but the rejection of tradition as elitist, racist, sexist, and all the rest." Last clip, number five, please.
We talked to that student this morning in an interview. He told us that he was shocked by what happened in class. The teacher won't be teaching that class anymore, but he is back in it today.
What do we call when we're in trouble and someone has a knife or a gun?
I wouldn't call the police.
Why wouldn't you call the police?
I don't trust them.
A Cypress College adjunct professor is now on leave after a Zoom video of an exchange with student Braden Ellis, who calls police heroes, went viral.
I think cops are heroes and they have to have a difficult job, but we have to have
all of them. Life.
Oh, I'd say a good majority of them.
Ellis gave a presentation on cancel culture and police in his verbal communication class. In a discussion afterward, the professor interrupted him multiple times, not agreeing with his support of law enforcement.
I have bad people in every business and every
part.
Police
officers have committed atrocious crimes and have gotten away with it and have never been convicted of any of it.
Ellis says he felt attacked.
I was shocked. I didn't really expect an answer like that. I was assuming that she would just play devil's advocate, but she put her bias in there and she gave me what she thought of the police. And it was a little bit sad, to be honest with you.
And that he worried.
That was a year ago, Steve.
He sounds smarter than his professor, that's for sure.
Sure does.
Let's take it on home at the end of this article, which I really enjoyed. Hope you did too. My fellow students and I deserved better, as did our paying parents. The undergraduate years are precious and often exorbitantly expensive. We should have been taught valuable skills and lessons that would sustain us through the inevitable confusions, battles, and sorrows of life. The solution I demand is for professors to humble themselves and go back to the basics. Instead of deconstructing text or using them as props for the latest edgy theory of oppression, college teachers should return to the careful, thrilling study of the intricacies of great works. They should approach them with attitude of respect toward what they have to teach us. That return might go a long way to reforming university culture. The wisdom and wonder is there. It's all still in the library, unless the books have been replaced by teachers and students need only to recover it again.
Amen.
Steve, what do you think of that article besides amen?
Well, I just want to say that when I read a book and I get in depth into it, and yes, some books are very difficult to read and understand, and some of those historical pieces, but when you take the Homer's Odyssey or you take the Iliad or any of these things, Shakespeare, the reason why you're reading it is you're capturing a time and a historical point of view that you'll never, ever come across again. You're getting something that, quite frankly, is Homer's Odyssey, 2,000 plus years, and it's still affecting storytelling today. Why would you not teach that over some quackery that I don't understand, Steve? You're supposed to go to college to learn and understand that there's historical pieces that we need to study because they actually have a groundwork for laying our Western foundation as a civilization.
That's right. And Shakespeare was not racist. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to my thought for the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or the Deezer Podcast app and hit the subscribe button and follow us. And thanks for doing it. In the first place, God made idiots. That was for practice. Then he made school boards. Mark Twain. Love that guy. You have to be involved during midterm elections. You have to care about what happens at a school board level. Barack Obama. Maybe he knew where the fertile ground was. there are a lot of very religious scientists around. I think the problem here is that in our school system, and to some degree, and this is where it is relevant, with school boards around the country that are mandating curriculums and textbooks, you start seeing this weird watering down of scientific fact so that our kids are growing up in an environment, and this connects to what I was saying earlier about the media, where everything's contested, where nothing is true. Barack Obama. Most of our competitor nations around the world have a national education system, and America is the only major nation in the world that operates off of local school boards. They receive very little direction from state boards of education or from the nation. So local school boards direct basically what happens, and too often they're not willing to track or to do the supervision of the education system that will make it world competitive. John Glenn. He was an American Marine Corps aviator, engineer, astronaut, businessman, and politician. He was the third American in space and the first American to orbit the Earth, circling it three times in 1962. That'll give you a global real-world perspective, won't it? That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Elliot Franklin, for looking out for our kids with a biblical worldview. If not you, who? Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper and mcview.us website, .us, okay, not .com, .us, and peace in our time.
At the county fair, they were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.